Who was in the WikiLeaks?
Open Mind.
Really?
So, yeah. So this is kind of funny. In their emails, because he was looking closely into the details for his talk at the conference about the emails going back and forth between Hillary's people and Jimmy Kimmel's people.
Right.
And in those emails, one of them, they're like, you know, Kimmel's people want clearance on the UFO thing. And somebody says, UFOs, why the hell do they want to talk about UFOs? And so the other person replied, well, because of this, and she gives some background, and one of most of the background that was provided was our story.
Really?
My stories about when Bill Clinton was on Jimmy Kimmel, and then Clinton's history regarding UFOs, and then Podesta's history regarding UFOs.
So,
So Kimmel's people and Hillary's people had read my story.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, you never know where you're going to turn up. A few people were kind of eerily freaked out about it. George Knapp talked about it a few times, especially when it first happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was freaked out. Leslie Cain was really freaked out. She said she didn't want to talk about it. Last time I interviewed her a couple weeks ago, I got her to say a little bit about it. But, she was kind of freaked out.
When did you talk to her?
Couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay. So this was before the Huffington thing came out, the Chilean video?
It was the day of.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yep.
I don't think any of those people should be freaked out about it. I mean, you've got to assume that if you do this kind of stuff, that somebody in the government's going to pay attention to you.
Yeah. Oh, well, she was a little freaked out because it was a private email between her and Podesta.
Right.
And he was freaked out. He was obviously very upset.
Yeah.
And I think that's why she felt that way. She was kind of sympathetic to his being really upset. And so she just was kind of also, you know, feeling violated.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess you would if you think that you're going over a private email server and people are going to read it. That would probably bother me. I assume from what I've been doing, that at least in the past, looked at what I was doing, listened to what I was saying, and probably read my emails. I kind of assumed that, so I just thought, well, I don't care. You know, what are they going to do to me?
Exactly. Since the beginning, that's how I've been. I've been like, I don't care. Most of what I do is to get it out to the public anyway, so have at it. You know, read whatever I've got. I don't care.
Yeah, and when the stuff I was dealing with, you know, when I was talking with Bill Moore and Doty and a few other different people, I'm almost certain that a lot of my stuff was followed and looked at. But the thing is that if there's a somebody has a problem with what I'm doing, I'll hear about it.
Right.
Then I can choose how I want to react to it. They can either say, we're going to kill you if you – then I'll probably say, okay, well, then maybe I guess I'll back off. Or they'll say, we rather you didn't do this. And then I could, you know, like, well, why did you rather I not do this?
Yeah.
would you like to tell me that? But, you know, you got to react to it in some way. But other than that, if nobody's threatening me or contacting me, why should I care?
Right.
I'm not running drugs. I'm not doing anything illegal. So they can't get me on anything. I'm not skipping taxes or anything like that.
Me either.
So I guess I am pretty spotless as far as the government is concerned, as far as I can tell. So why should I care if they're listening when I'm doing some sort of research or a story or interviewing somebody or whatever? I can't really worry about it. You know, you have the first reaction, like, oh, my God. But I'd gone through that already in the 90s during my magazine. Yeah. So it's, you know, your skin gets toughened up pretty quickly if you want to keep doing it.
Yeah, I feel the same.
However,
no, the whole extraterrestrial thing is not a viable solution to this.
We need to go through a turning point in the study of this whole domain, away from ideology. We're not here to prove that we're being visited by, you know, aliens from this planet or that star. That may very well be true, but we have not done the basic work.
Scientist hunch that the that this phenomenon is comes from some sort of domain of peer information, and the fact that it can interact with us at all suggests that that we inhabit a domain that's also peer information.
Are we go conditioned here? Yes.
My friend, we are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about
Radio Mysterioso.
I have two reasons that I asked if you could be on, and you said yes at very short notice. One was I wanted to talk about the Chilean video a bit, and two, mm-hmm. I wanted to talk about the International UFO Congress because you have graciously invited me to be there and give a presentation, which I'm slightly nervous about. Anyway.
Why are you nervous?
Because it's a lot of people who will know exactly what I'm talking about, and they will know exactly if I mess up or say something that's not right. Most people I talk to, you know, it's a general audience, even though it's a UFO audience. I did this last night. I went to a retirement community and I spoke there for some people. And I said, does anybody know who Bill Moore is? Silence. Does anybody know who Richard Doty is? Silence. Has anybody ever heard of the Eisenhower briefing document? Silence. But if I'm presenting at a UFOC, I know that there are people that know way more than me and will be able to jump on anything I say that's in error.
Yeah. Well, you'll hear from them. When you go back to your table, they'll come and they'll say, hey.
Oh, I've had that happen. I don't mind about people in general. If I make a mistake, that's great. And if they correct me, that's great. People that I like and probably respect, if they came up to me and said, you know, you've met this, that actually wasn't correct, I'd be mortified. But if it was just somebody in the audience that wasn't another writer that, you know, I don't expect to know these things, said I didn't, for some reason, I'd go, oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, I guess I better correct that. It's the same mistake, but it's the person that tells me that makes a difference.
Yeah.
So, when I came home, I hurriedly put together a timeline of what went on with this Chilean UFO video from my point of view. I don't know if we should even background people on it because people listen to my show probably know. Maybe we can give a short one. Do you want to do it or do you want me to do it?
I can if you like.
Yeah, please do because you're the guest.
Okay. So do that now. Is this the show?
Yes, this is the show. Now we're talking.
Okay, great. Yeah, so a little background. Okay, so CEFA-A, that's the way they like to say it, strangely enough, the Chilean government organization, official government organization there under the DGAC is what it's called, which is their equivalent to our FAA. They also are overseen by the Air Force. In fact, their director up until just last month was a general with the Air Force, General Bermudez, who was at the conference, the UFO Congress in 2012. So it's an official organization, a big one and a very influential one. They have helped spawn other official government UFO agencies throughout South America. So they are a big deal and they do a lot of outreach. But they had they have had a few investigations, quite a few that they've put out, and this is the most recent where a Navy helicopter had captured an object over one of their bases or nearby, and they didn't know what it was. They captured it using their infrared, and so they've allegedly have been investigating for 2 years. The way they investigate is to kind of send the information out to different agencies and departments and then get information back, and they couldn't figure out what it was. So as they've done in the last few years, they get this information to Leslie Kane, who then writes a blog about it on the Huffington Post, and usually these get attention, but this one got a ton of attention, so it went all over the place. They admitted in Leslie's article that the French, a French aeronautic engineer organization that is very pro UFO and helps out the French UFO official investigative group, GEPAN, they had said they think it's a plane. It looks like a plane, but the response from CEFAA, even to myself when I talked to their interim director and also their director of national affairs, Jose Lai, is that there was no plane in that area. Their radar did not pick up a plane. They have no record of a plane being in that area. That's part of their investigation is that there was no plane in that area. And also they felt that this kind of substance that appeared that was coming out of this craft was odd, even though many people believe it's probably just your typical contrail. So that was the background of the video. But since it's come out, that's been put into question. And do you want me to continue on with the rest?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead with the Open Minds Rojas version of what happened with the video, and then we'll discuss it point by point, because I know you read what I wrote about it and how detailed I was, and we'll get into that in a minute. But go ahead and please finish the story.
Yeah, so many, including yourself, had called that into question. The main, probably the first and one of the first, the biggest one to go out was Metabunk, this debunking website where this guy said had looked at what all of us as UFO researchers are aware of, these tracking sites where you can go and look at historical data to see what aircraft were in the area at the time. So he went back and he looked at that and he said, hey, you know, I don't know what Chile's talking about. There are aircraft that if you use the telemetry from their camera, that is most likely what they filmed. Right. So I had actually asked Leslie, you know, is this it? And she said, well, I think there might be some problems with that analysis, but we're working on a response to that. Mm-hmm. And so in this response that finally just came out a couple days ago, she's kind of pretty much, you know, acknowledging that it was an airplane. She relied on a couple other researchers, one of those being Robert Powell, who's the director of research for MUFON. He worked on the Stephenville case on some radar stuff, and he's also worked on the Puerto Rico case of another case of an infrared video.
Right.
He felt that the plane didn't fit just right. You know, it wasn't in the right area, although it did look like the plane. But they found out there was a mistake in kind of the directions. And once they accounted for that mistake, it fit perfectly.
Right.
And it was one of those planes that Metabunk had claimed it was. And so she outlines, you know, their investigation and how they figured that out very well. And so this one, unfortunately, it looks like Chile's got it wrong. CEFAA, as far as I know, has not made an official response to kind of on this yet. But I would imagine it's forthcoming. But I think what you've written about, what others have written about, I think pretty definitely seal the deal that, you know, that was an aircraft.
Right. Well, I guess there's some lessons to be learned from this. And one of them is, I guess more, you know, research has to be done on things before this kind of stuff is released. And two, something I noticed when Leslie was on, I listened to only one show she was on. I listened to Whitley Strieber's show to Unknown Country from about a week ago. And they both discussed it. And this was before she wrote her article and probably even heard Robert Powell's analysis. And she and Strieber were both saying that the people at the Metabunk site were very rude, and they were being, what's the word, making a lot of assumptions, and it looked like they were just out to debunk and make people look bad. And my response to that was, if that's what the way they were, I probably wouldn't have paid any attention to them, because the attitude always bothers me. You have to like kind of get through the attitude to get to the meat of it. If you actually look at the site, all they concentrate on was the data. They didn't say these people are stupid. Why did they release this? At least, I don't know, for the most part, they didn't. It didn't seem like a ego-driven thing to me. I mean, I'm sure it was, because they like debunking these things. But yeah, they didn't call anybody names. They didn't tell anybody that they were stupid or anything like that. It's like, okay, here's the data we've been given, as much as we can possibly tell. What can we do with this data? Let's see. And they went through it. I had a timeline I made up. So on January 5th, Leslie Keene's story came out on Huffington Post. That same day, I looked at what she said, and I said, well, let's see. Two heat sources, looks like jet engines. Something gets shot out of it. Maybe there's some problem with the fuel burn, and it's burning, you know, inefficiently, and it's sending something out. Didn't show up on radar. Well, stealth aircraft don't show up on radar. Didn't respond to radio calls. Well, stealth aircraft probably wouldn't respond to radio calls. Yeah. So that was my guess at the time. Mm-hmm. And the main thing was, you know, I looked at it, it's like, that looks like two heat sources from jet engines. And I looked at pieces of video online, which sort of matched it, but not exactly. And I wanted an exact match. And then Metabunk put up some that were sort of matching, but not exact, too. On the 6th and the 7th, I went to the Metabunk site, January 6th and 7th. This is the 2 days after the article was released. And I went through every single thing that they wrote with a fine-tooth comb, as much as I could understand them, which is probably about 95% of it, about directions, about what infrared cameras look like, about what traffic was in the area and what they were trying to determine. And to me, it looked fairly good. So I said it satisfied my reasonable doubt by the 7th. And then they added some more stuff on the 10th having to do with more exact locations of aircraft, because there were two in the area. And on the 10th, I said, okay, well, like probably 90% or 95% of my reasonable doubt has been satisfied. So I'm I'm willing to say that that's an airplane. On the 17th, a week later, Leslie Keene wrote her article saying, well, it probably looks like a plane, but she didn't go 100% and say, well, it probably is. She left it open, I think partially to save face a bit.
Yeah, especially for Sepha. I think not so much herself, but...
Okay, because we don't have an... Did you talk to them about what did they react since the aircraft explanation was offered?
Apparently, I mean, I just have from what she wrote, and she wrote something like they haven't had a response, so I'm not aware of one. I haven't personally sought one, because I kind of feel like the story's dead since it was figured out what it was.
It kind of is. I was going to write a big article on it, and it's like, well, if Leslie Keene was still fighting for it, I was going to try and get in contact with her and say, look, I'm trying to be completely unbiased, but I want to find out what. And she wrote her article, and she says, this is the last thing I'm going to say about it, because she's probably sick of it by now.
Yeah, well. And she's been trying to transition to other things anyway, but she just has this really close relationship with Sepha. The only criticism I had of the Metabunk story is that I agree with you. I don't think it was outrightly rude or anything. The only thing that was maybe a bit egotistical was to assume that Sepha hadn't accounted for his findings. And I, if I were him, I would have asked them first. Yeah. If they had an explanation for that before making a final conclusion and giving them the benefit of the doubt, just respecting who they are. But
I don't think you can do that these days, because the internet is so fast. And if they'd asked them, it's a government organization. I don't think they'd gotten an answer for quite a while. Or if they did, it would have been, we'll get back to you.
You're right. And I agree with you 100% on that. You can't wait too long. I mean, you can ask them but give them maybe 48 hours.
Right, right. I see what you mean.
Mm-hmm. But you're right. And then otherwise say, I did reach out to them, but I haven't received a response, or they said they'll – so I'll let you know when I hear something. But
right.
Yeah, I agree with you. You can't wait too long. Definitely you can't wait a week or two or anything like that.
You can't. You have to do things almost – there's got to be – there's daily developments on a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
And it's fair, because if you don't do that, really, someone else will. And, you know, you should get credit for good work that you've done. So
right.
Which this person did do good work, it turns out. So
yeah. And I, like I said, I was all prepared to be, you know, actually I wasn't prepared for anything. You know what people ask me, Alejandro, and it's I try to make this my attitude. I was talking to some people in a skeptical group. I'm talking to people in my UFO groups and other people. Every single one of them, I wanted to make it clear. I told them, I don't care if it's identified or not. I really don't care. And they said, well, why don't you care? You should care. And I said, because if I start caring about if it's identified or not, I start biasing myself.
Yeah. And I agree with you 100%. That's exactly how I approach it. And I think that makes people upset. I mean, I've definitely been at these, let's say, a MUFON campfire where I'm talking about a case, and because I don't have a pro ET stance about a sighting, you know, people get frustrated. But it's like, we just don't know. I'm not here to prove ET's here. I'm here to explore what might be going on, and if that's what it turns out to be, great. If that turns out not to be what it is, if it turns out we get some sort of answer that has nothing to do with ET at all, so be it, you know?
Yeah.
I agree with you. I feel the same way, and it's freeing, because then you can look at the data and the information, and you don't have those issues that a lot of researchers that you've probably talked to as well have, where they get so tied in to one aspect and they have a hard time letting it go, even when they have to, and it causes them distress.
Yeah. One thing, you know, I actually got involved on the MetaBunk list, and I put in a few comments and questions. One of them that what nobody reacted to, and what they said, one of the things in the original report was, they said that the aircraft was flying through restricted airspace. So being a pilot, what do? You go look at an aeronautical chart and see if there's restricted airspace. Mm-hmm. So I went and looked at one. Before I did, somebody else had already posted something as there isn't any restricted airspace. I looked at the aeronautical chart. That's something I made clear, too. I'm a licensed pilot, so I understand some of what they're talking about. In fact, probably mm-hmm. most of it. Anyway, that's why I was interested. Otherwise, I'm kind of like, it's just another UFO video.
Yeah.
Because I think UFO videos prove very little. And I think the reason this one seemed important is because a government agency said that it was, you know, it was legitimate. But I went and looked at the restricted airspace around it. And there are little things that look like aeronautical charts in the United States, where if there's an R with a number, it means a restricted airspace. It doesn't mean you can't fly through it.
Mm-hmm.
Restricted is not prohibited. So there's a difference there. I found little bits of
permission first or something.
You don't even really have to get permission. You just kind of have to be careful and talk to air traffic control and say, look, I'm going from here to here. And they'll probably say, you're going to be going through R2026 and they're inactive today, so don't worry. Or you're going to be going through mm-hmm. R2026 and they are active today, so you're going to have to divert around that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been on the radio with air traffic control and had these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So I noticed there were areas around there that said that had codes, and they had the same graphic on there that restricted airspace would have, but they were not around the airport. There was one maybe in the area where the thing was being filmed. But the thing is, I don't know how they would ever know if something was that far away, if it was exactly over the restricted airspace, because the restricted airspace isn't that big. And that's so the point I'm trying to make here is there is a lot of minutia going on in this thing, a lot of things about, you know, where the camera's pointed, where the helicopter was, where the supposed target was, how far away it was, things like, you know, why didn't the radar see it? Well, they didn't see it on the helicopter's radar. Helicopter's radar doesn't go that far.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they said they didn't see it on radar on the ground. It's like, well, which radar were they looking at?
Well, and they got the distance wrong because the thing was what?
Yes.
And that's probably a big part of it, where they assumed the craft was is not where it actually was. So that probably creates a big problem.
Pilots can make mistakes. It happens, especially if you're trying to gauge distance. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, and if you're Jose, you know, I can only feel how embarrassed, and he may be really pissed off because his guys told him this thing was, you know, an unknown, and it's not. So he may be circling around to all of these people and saying, you made me look like a fool on American media, you know, and you made me – and, you know, look what we did to poor Leslie. How did you guys get this wrong? How did you screw this up? So that could be – I would imagine if I was him, that would be some of the behind the scenes that might be going on and delaying, you know, a response.
Exactly. What did you think when you first read the story? Were you just kind of like, let's wait and see, or did you jump on it, or –
Oh, I was excited. That's why I got a hold of Leslie immediately. And I said, I would really love to talk to you and Jose about this or you about this. And then she's like, I could also get Jose on, who I've met several times and I know. And so I was really excited about that. And I said, do you think we could do it today? Because at that time I was going to Denver for the weekend. And she said she could. So we arranged it and we talked. So I was excited about it. I mean, I feel that Sefa and Leslie would be more careful than most. Leslie's a great journalist, and that's why she has so much mainstream attention, very credible. And Sefa, I know their heart's in the right place, and they do their best to do good work, and they wouldn't want to be sloppy to put Leslie in a poor position. And I know Jose would not want to come talk to American media without knowing what he's talking about. So I think they felt very confident, which made me feel good, but I'm never 100% on anything. Like you said, you know, you never want to be down too much on one way or another. However, when the Metabunk thing came out, I did want to wait to hear their response, and you know, I asked Leslie, and she said one was forthcoming, so I didn't really want to go too far until I got a response.
Yeah,
and so now we have that, and so now we see, and I'm really happy that she chose Robert to work with because I think he's great. The other thing I wanted to note is that Martin Willis of Podcast UFO did interview the guy who wrote the Metabunk story.
Yes, I heard about that. I didn't hear the podcast yet.
But Martin says, you know, he's worked with him before. He's actually – and he's just a good guy. He doesn't put ego into it. And I guess he was very – you know, he wasn't rubbing anybody's face in it or being obnoxious like we know some skeptics can be.
Yeah. Well, I have some friends, at least online friends, that are skeptics. And they are really saying, well, we've got to, you know, put their feet to the fire and rub their nose in. And I said, you know, if you do that – that makes people even less likely to listen to you next time. If somebody's embarrassed enough to say, look, I screwed up, how bad do you think they feel at that point? I think that's enough of a lesson.
Exactly. Amen to that. Exactly. You don't have to kick these people or beat them up. We all get something wrong. They're going to get something wrong at some point. And that's just not a professional thing to do. Yeah.
I may have personal feelings about the way something was handled or the way somebody did something, but in public and to their face, I'm not going to call them names or anything. I might at the very worst say, how could you have done that? You know, with a smile on my face.
Yeah.
And just, you know, see what the reaction is. But I'm never going to kick somebody about it. It's just unless they're just nasty people, then I guess I don't have as much problem with that. But there's not too many nasty people in the field, and I avoid them. But there's a thing called diplomacy, you know.
Right.
You know, and I may not agree with what people say, or I may not agree with the way a story was broken or how it was researched or whatever. But I want to hear what the people did, and if they notice that they made a mistake, maybe they don't make that mistake next time. If you don't, like you said, rub their nose at it.
Right.
A lesson learned is a lot deeper when you feel like you've learned it yourself, rather than somebody spanking you for it.
Right. Exactly.
So that was my biggest problem with a lot of what was swirling around this, and you know, there was some of that stuff on the UFO believer side too, with, you know, these skeptics are so nasty, and you didn't actually read the Metabunk article because they weren't nasty.
Yeah. And you know, Leslie did write in her story. Surprisingly, that was another shocking thing about her response, is it started off by kind of her airing her grievances with different people.
Well, she was pissed off at that point, probably with herself and a lot of people.
Yeah, exactly. And she would, one of those groups of people we haven't even mentioned that she was upset with, and this is unfortunately the internet these days, is people stealing the stuff, stealing the video, stealing the photos, stealing her story without giving any credit.
Right.
Which is frustrating. You know, these YouTubers, and I have no sympathy for them, and I know some of them have gotten upset, but so be it, who will go download your video and then load it up on their site. No, you can post our video. You don't have to do that. And especially if it's something, you know, one of the few things we charge for, I will just have it yanked and they get a red mark and they could get their account closed. But you don't do that. You just don't do that.
Yeah.
You don't post stuff where you don't know where it comes from.
Yeah, I completely agree. The one thing I noticed in that article, although when I posted it on my Facebook group, I said, you know, a surprisingly magnanimous response from Leslie Keene. She did not once mention the Metabunk people at
That's
all.
That's a good point. You know, and I was a bit surprised by that, especially her being a journalist. And maybe it was a little bit of kill the messenger type of stuff. But I think it would have been appropriate to reference that Metabunk story.
Yeah. And the other thing I found that was kind of amazing was suddenly there were radar records available to Robert Powell.
Well, you know, Robert has he's very good at that. He's worked on getting radar data and he knows the different nuances to doing that.
Right.
So he might have.
You might have gotten it himself.
Yeah, he might have known where to go because he knows that there are – I hate this term because I like cats, but there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Yes,
there are
I agree
different
with you.
Avenues to go because you exactly. just have to be aware of all the different types of radar that are out there.
Yeah, I was trying to find out what Chilean aeronautical charts, what the key to them, you know, some kind of legend about how they use their markings on their charts, and I couldn't find any. So I asked on the Metabunk because they're very good at tracking stuff down and nobody said anything, which made me feel like, are they not interested in, you know, taking care of this part of it? Because I think at that point they weren't, because they'd pretty much said, look, there's, you know, we're 99.9% certain this is an aircraft. Yeah. So we don't really have to worry about those issues. But I was just trying to dot the I's and cross the T's for myself. How interested are you? And how interested do you think people are in all this minutia of the explanation? Because a lot of people will allow leeway to somebody who is a quote unquote authority. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, they have to believe that, you know, they have to figure the authorities on their side. Like, I'm going to listen to the UFO authority, but not the skeptical authority on this case. If people can't get into that minutia themselves because they just can't, they don't have the time or they don't understand it. How do you trust a source in that case? You know, do you have to trust somebody and just go along with it?
That is a great question, because one of the things that when I write, I try to use journalistic standards. And so there has to be, for me, a credentialed authority, or at least the most credentialed person that you can reference who's been able to look at an expert in that area that's been able to look at the information. And quite frankly, I mean, in this case, Sefa was the authority, but at the beginning, they were the most credentialed. But I think the minutiae is important for us. Because we're the people putting out the information and the quote unquote experts in some way. And unfortunately, that's today's world where you just do have to trust somebody. I think, you know, in a world of fake news, and after what happened earlier today, you know, on a world level, there are people who put their faith where they genuinely believe in certain individuals who are just making stuff up. I mean, an example is, let's say, Alex Jones. You know, these are people who say things and they're so certain, they sound so certain about what they're saying, that many people think, you know, this people aren't going to lie to me. He's not going to lie to me about all of this stuff or make stuff up. And so they trust these sources. Maybe some of your listeners trust him as a source. And I'm sorry, people, but he's
I don't an think awful so. Source. Not my I show. Not. I don't think so.
Well, I like to think that of my listeners, but you never know. That's what it comes down to. And I mean, we know this in this field. You know, there are different people that different people listen to, and they may come to you and say, you know, Dr. X said this about this UFO sighting. And you explain, well, here's why I disagree. And they just aren't going to listen to you because you're not their authority.
Right.
It's difficult. It's a difficult time when it comes to all of this information. So it's important for you and me because we will get to the minutia to figure out what happened.
I did this time, like I said, because I just like, okay, it has to do with aircraft and it has to do with radar and radio calls and all that. That's another thing that was not really addressed too much. And I think in the Metabunk, they actually said something eventually. There are hundreds of frequencies that people can talk on. When they said nobody was answering on the frequency, it's like, who were they talking to? What frequency is that person supposed to be on? Are they listening on that frequency?
Well, and a lot of what these guys are looking for, just like in the Homeland Security, the reason that these military and or law enforcement aircraft have these infrared cameras, it's because they're looking for drug runners or people who have contraband, people who don't want to be noticed.
Yeah, or enemy aircraft, and they're looking for a heat signature of an aircraft.
Yeah, so this could have been, a mule or, you know, somebody who didn't want to answer to any radio or didn't want to be known. And that's a big possibility. You know, I think it was Mark D'Antonio who said, if it's an aircraft, like in this case, it's an aircraft. If the signature is of an aircraft, regardless of whether or not it was supposed to be there or that you knew it was supposed to be there, it's got the signature of an aircraft. You can't prove. You can't say it's anything but.
Can, but you have a weak case.
A weak case in your investigation really should be around why was that aircraft there? And you outlined some excellent – it could have been a stealth. What the hell would a stealth craft be doing there? We don't know. We're not going to find out. There's no way we can find out because if it's American, they're not going to tell us. If it's Chinese because the Chinese have them, they're not going to tell us.
Right. So I said maybe it was even something the Chileans were developing, but my first guess was they released the story because I've got this conspiratorial government mind. My first guess was something was flying there and the Chileans wanted the government of the United States or some other place to know, look, we saw it. We're going to call it a UFO for now, but we saw it and we're going to tell everybody we saw it. So don't think that we don't see you doing this kind of stuff. You know, but I think it was the airliner. I'm almost certain. But that was my first guess before I knew this stuff.
It's a great point, especially with your history with the Doty case and all this, you know, subterfuge and all of this. That is another possibility.
Oh, there's one other thing. I think one of my friends wanted me to bring up that the last CEFA study that people know about, or at least they brought up, was one where they – and I didn't look at it real carefully. Mm-hmm. It was where they said there was a some anomalous thing flying through a video during an air show, I think. And it turned out skeptical groups said it was bugs very close to the camera. I looked at it, and the thing is in front of the hills and going up, and it just looks like a dot. So I'm without looking at the minutiae, I kind of think it's a bug. But I didn't go and look at that. Do you know about that case?
I do know about that case very well. In fact, I got one of the first YouTube videos up with those because they didn't have them and they said I could do it. So I did. So I've got a YouTube video with those up and I agree. This was one and, you know, I this person's right that this was another case like this where they gave this story to Leslie. Leslie posted it with the pictures and links to the videos and stuff like that. And it looked like bugs. However, they said it wasn't bugs because there were multiple videos. They got this thing from different angles. But those other videos, it turned out, didn't actually exist. So it was another error in the investigation. And they eventually did admit that they were bugs. But yeah, I agree. From the get-go, it looked like bugs. It would have been the same thing as bugs. But, you know, because that sort of thing is what bugs do or can look like on a camera. Of course, bugs move very fast on a camera and they're small. So it could have been something else. And if they would have gotten other cameras getting this
right, the same information from different angles, that'd have been great.
Yeah, that would have proven that it wasn't a small thing close to the camera, that it was something further away. But that didn't happen. And that was one where I would follow up with Leslie and, you know, it started to be like, no, we haven't gotten all the other camera angles yet, but I should get that soon. And it started to turn into, I don't think they have any other video. And so they did eventually, you know, come out and say, well, those other videos that we were told exist did not, and it is bugs. So,
okay. Well, see, from a skeptical point of view, they're saying, okay, they've got two strikes on them now, and
yeah.
Why should we believe anything they say in the future? And that you know, I guess that's unfortunate. I'm still trying to figure out, you know, one, why they pushed the bugs thing in the first place, and two, why they pushed this one when it's I not being anybody that has any experience with infrared cameras, but just went and looked up like, well, what do jet engines look like on an infrared camera? They look just like that. So that would be the first thing I would have thought of. So
my guess is it feels a lot like MUFON. You know, it feels like a new MUFON chapter because this happens, you know, with new investigators with MUFON, and they get a video and they're like, oh my God, look at this. And, you know, someone who's been looking at that sort of thing for 20 years can say, it's bugs, or that's a duck, or you know, or a bird, or
a balloon. It's a bird flying from the side that looks like a saucer or whatever. Yeah,
aircraft. All of these things that got us excited the first time we saw it.
Right.
I mean, I had this video that looked amazing. It was like a Jaime Musan video where all of these craft were in the air. It's like, oh my God, that cannot be. And then I took it home and really zoomed in, and all of us were excited.
Balloons.
And I saw the wings.
Ah.
And then I zoomed out, and I was like, you know what? They just flew under the cloud through the rain, and then they hit this area that where the sun was coming through, and they lit up like all heck. And I went to MUFON and said, you know what? I looked at this guy's a duck butts. And, you know, one guy especially was like, no. The director of investigations was like, no way. There's absolutely no way. And so I showed him, you know, one of them where you can really see the flapping.
Yeah.
And he said, well, they can't all be ducks. And I'm like, so you're saying it's a group of UFOs flying along with
ducks?
These ducks?
And okay, he's like, that's pretty bad.
Finally, he was like, oh, man, you know, you just get so invested. Like you said, you can't have a major investment in the outcome, because otherwise it gets really hard when you have to say, wow, we got this one wrong, especially if you're out there telling all your buddies or something, oh, we've got this great video. And then you've got to say it turned out to be ducks.
Yeah. Well, I think your predisposition about whatever is going on is going to color very heavily what you're going to how you're going to see something. It always does. You can't help it. So, you know, maybe that attitude that I said at the beginning, which I've tried to inculcate in myself, I don't care whether it's identified or not. Then I don't have an emotional investment. That's the other thing. If you have an emotional investment in some of these outcomes, it's you know, it happens in science too.
Oh yeah.
People have an emotional investment in something, or some kind of monetary investment, and who's paying for the study? And of course you're going to find, you know, if Exxon's paying for the study, you're going to find you're encouraged to find what they want you to find. Which is unfortunate.
Yeah, you can only imagine the disappointment. I mean, what if CEFA had a bunch of money in this? I mean, people's jobs could be lost, careers could be destroyed. Yeah, when it gets to that level, there's much more at stake.
Yeah. Okay, a final question before we talk a little bit about the conference. In the aftermath of this, how do you think it affects the field itself? Do you think more people will be careful? This is what I thought after the Roswell mummy. I thought nobody would care about the stupid – I said, yeah, it's another dumb picture that doesn't really prove anything, and so what? And then I got added. I was secretly a member of the Roswell Slides research group, although I did nothing. Because I didn't think anything was going to happen. I just, yeah, well, whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the group one day and it says, I think we solved it. And I was thinking, solve what? What? And within 2 days, I had everybody on my show, everybody I could that was in that group who I'd hardly communicated with at all. And I said, okay, what did you guys actually do? And the reason I did that is because I was seeing things online and talking to people, and people were saying, oh my God, you know, I was really into this and I thought it was really promising. And then I find out that it's just people that didn't really pay attention to things that they didn't want to pay attention to. And that seemed to have an effect. I mean, people that are hardcore are never going to change. That doesn't matter. But a few people that go, eh, maybe I should be a little bit more circumspect about this if I'm still going to be interested in this. And that's how I think this video affected people. What do you think?
Well, I think with the Roswell slides, it was a bit different in that. Okay, a quick analysis of Roswell slides because I want to get to Chile.
Yeah.
But is that luckily that didn't really go big. Mainstream media didn't pay attention to
it. That's true.
Even Lee Spiegel thought it was so stupid. He didn't want to touch it. He thought it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
However, it goes back to our conversation about authorities. And even myself in some way, I love Don Schmidt. I'll admit it. He's a great guy. I know him very well. But these were two authorities, Don Schmidt and Jaime Musan. And people listened to them and they were saying this was anomalous. It took too long, unfortunately, for Don Schmidt to come out and say, you know, there wasn't something to it. But what really stirred people's ire, I think, is Jaime Musan's, now I can say now in hindsight, Trump-like mentality when it came to this case, and that he did not want to let it go.
Right.
He disparaged the Roswell Research Group, who did amazing work at figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
I had words with Jaime. We haven't talked since because, you know, it's dishonest of him. He just wanted to push it for sensationalism. And he still, I think, I still have gotten emails too from one of his investigators who's trying to convince me, the doctor guy who keeps sending me stuff saying, look, I found some more information that you know, is mysterious and that this is something odd.
If you ignore the card that says it's a mummified child, it's still mysterious.
And that's what, yeah, exactly. And that's what keeps pushing this, you know, as Jaime keeps pushing it. And, you know, for better or worse, I think for better, actually, you know, Jaime lost credibility here in the United States for the most part. And so you don't hear from him as much here. And finally, I admittedly, you know, as hard as it is to say, have never really felt strongly about Jaime's work. Often the videos he would show were videos that we had shown were
explained,
debunked on our website. So it's just like, oh my gosh. So yeah, I've never been a fan of his work there. So yeah, that was difficult. But getting back to Chile, this is what's really weird, though, is in the end, it probably helps ufology, because in the general community out there, with the man on the street, the average Joe who knows nothing about UFOs, to them and to the media, this was an amazing UFO video that the Chileans discovered, and that's all they're going to know, because the media picked this up and they ran with it. They always, even when I was, you know, when I was doing PR for MUFON, and I see this all the time now, all they care about is running with the initial story.
Right.
Once something is debunked, they rarely, if ever, cover that. So the story out there is that there's this amazing video the Chileans got, and that's what the word will be around the water cooler, and that's what people are talking about.
Yeah, so, I've had friends get to me on that and said, did you hear about this thing? I said, yeah, it was explained. They said, no, it wasn't. And I said, yeah, it was, actually. It was airplanes.
Yeah, so the very few people will know that it was explained, and most people will know that it was something big. And for better or worse, you know, this is what happens with Leslie's stories. Most of the time, they're really strong. So it's very credible, great stuff. But unfortunately, with this story and the bug story, those have not panned out. But nobody's going to know that but us.
Well, the thing is that I've got this contention, which I'll probably talk about in my lecture, is like, why should anybody in ufology care what people think outside? Because most people already have an idea of what UFO study is. Nothing's going to change that unless something really big happens. Something just, you know, mind-blowingly amazing or paradigm-shifting, and it's not going to come from UFO researchers. It's going to come from the phenomenon itself or how we look at things. Like a scientist will say, oh my God, you know, everything that we look at is made up with our minds, and it's, you know, and it's very heavily based on our culture and, you know, what we think is going to be there and our genetic heritage about what should be in a certain place when we look and all that. If that becomes mainstream, that will change the UFO thing. I don't think ufologists are going to change it. But I think they should try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, because there are some human influences. So, for instance, the UK, the tabloids have really kind of decimated, I think, you know, the credible mainstream media stuff that's online because they've taken over. You know, they take all the stories, they twist them, and then they put them out there, or they cover Secure Team 10 or hoax fake stuff for the sensationalism. And I mean, that's what's out there big time is these UK tabloids. So that's negative and unfortunate, but it is what it is. If, let's say, SETI, for some reason, it, you know, a scientist, and there are scientists interested in this topic, SETI or some other scientific university or Michio Kaku, who's into the topic, takes it even further, or John Podesta and really puts it out, then maybe they could have a positive effect. But Nick Pope always says this field is events led, and I agree with that.
Yeah,
exactly what you said. It would have to take a big event, and if we are being visited by some extraterrestrial civilization, then they're going to reveal themselves in the manner that they want to when they want to, and we really don't have any influence over that. So we can just observe, and that's it. So I agree with you. It's a waste of energy to get really hung up on who believes what and how people see this or that,
or get any respect or anything like that. It's just that's not that. That's another thing. That's another effect of ego, I think.
Yeah,
I really want somebody to take me seriously. Mm-hmm. Like, do you want to find out what's going on, or do you want somebody to take you seriously?
Yeah.
I think you'd want to find out what's going on first.
Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, I've seen men brought to tears. A man, I should say.
Yeah.
Maybe more. You know, who have been in this field their life thinking, you know, am I going to have to die without knowing and not being taken seriously? And, you know, and.
Well, yes, you are.
Most likely you are.
Because, like, and you have to make peace with that. You know, it's just kind of like, you know what? Look for, you know what? Another thing in my talk, I'm going to say, you know, we should look for understanding and not an answer. If you say answer, you've already presupposed that you're going to find out an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is an answer, I don't think there is an answer. I think it's so tied up with how we deal with reality that the answer is going to come from within, you know, from how we deal with things, not from whatever is affecting it from outside. And I do think something from outside is affecting us. I'm almost certain of that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the internal external thing.
You deserve an answer. I mean, do you think you deserve an answer more than, you know, J. Allen Hynek did or, you know, any of these other researchers who spent their life and reputation looking into this stuff?
Yeah. Gray Barker, Gordon Creighton, all these people. In fact, I think they got to a point, even Jim Moseley, I think, told me this. He said, you know, there's no hope of finding an answer. The only thing you can possibly get anything out of is studying the people. And that was what his angle was. And I see a lot of wisdom in that.
Yeah. Yeah, I did too. And it's that's what I loved about him is making light of that aspect, which is needed because we all need to be humbled. And it was kind of fun, the people who would get upset who didn't like the humbling that he was dishing out.
Yeah, he became eventually he became a fairly good friend, and or at least I think I counted him as one. And I was very sorry when he passed away, but I did get to talk to him. I did get to hang out at Roswell with him in 97, which was very funny.
Wow.
and I've got a picture of him at a rave with a couple of girls drinking a beer with a glow stick around his head. It's wonderful.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious.
With a big dumb smile on his face. Anyway, so the International UFO Conference, though, how many years is it now?
26.
Will be coming up starting February 15th or 16th?
15th. You got it.
Right. Going for 5 days?
That's right. Until okay. the 19th.
Okay. I mean, I'm doing this from memory. I know I'm speaking on Friday.
Mm-hmm. So far.
Yeah. So far I'm speaking on Friday?
Right. As long as something doesn't change.
I guess
my point being, as I did speak with Ben Hansen earlier, like I had talked about,
uh-huh.
and he needs to change his time. So stuff like that comes up. So we might need to switch you. We might not. But of course, I'll talk to you about it.
Okay.
But,
I was kind of happy with where I was at. And one, it's the only thing wrong with it is it's right after lunch. But oh, well, I'll give everybody a huge shot of coffee or something before I talk. Other than that, I like that spot. I like that spot a lot. And I'm on right after John or right before John Alexander, strangely enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that ought to be interesting.
Yeah, I think that would be a nice one, too, because I used to be scared of John Alexander, and now I'm interested in what he has to say, because I think it's important, especially because a lot of people don't want to hear it.
Well, that's what's funny about what he's talking about at the conference this year, getting into the conference, is that people don't want to hear it. Because – and I think it just makes sense personally. I mean, this is a guy who was intelligence. He got other people in intelligence to research, well, how does the government or the military really deal with UFOs? These are the best people to get that information. And because he's telling you what you don't want to hear, he's got to be a disinformationist is what people say. And that's just silly. And his talk this year proves that. Because first of all, people like him and Nick Pope, who were in the government, have been some of the biggest champions and proponents of UFO research and bringing it to the mainstream. And they're very credible when and their word is taken more highly than others when they come out and say there's something real to this mystery.
Right.
So they're some of the most important people to this field, way more important than the people who are calling them disinformationists, because they don't have anything skin in the game like these guys do. But John is going to be talking about his personal UFO sighting that he had with other UFO researchers and some of the strange paranormal phenomena that happened around it.
Yes.
This is going to be one of our most fringe talks at the conference.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from John Alexander.
Yeah, exactly. And yet the whole time he's been going, the government really doesn't know that much. I've been looking into it. I don't think they do. And people are like, what? Of course they do. And then he mm-hmm. comes out with this, which is even more fascinating to me when I read the write-up for the talk.
Yeah, so this ought to be great. And the thing is that, you know, others have interviewed a lot of military, talked to a lot of military. And you know what? What they're telling me is fits right along the lines of what John Alexander says on how the military handles things, and including in their own government documents, which you and I and others have poured through. So, mm-hmm. You know, he's not so off base. He may not have it 100% right, but, you know, he's closer than most.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you can't really, you know, take anybody's word as gospel. You really can't, because then you start closing yourself off to other things. It's kind of this zen, non-focused thing that you have to do, and then really, you know, get your ego out of it and get your emotions out of it as much as possible, and more things open up to you. And if you don't have to be upset about things, you can play with ideas a little bit better.
Yeah, and you'll not go bonkers like some people do.
Yeah, exactly. Who else is speaking?
So we have a lot of stuff, and you know, it's funny because someone who gets emotional about what people say is the other colonel we have, Colonel Holt.
Yeah.
And you know, I know him well. I love the guy, but he almost lives in a perpetual state of frustration. And I think people can understand why, because there's so much weirdness around the Rendlesham Forest case and people changing their testimony or coming up with these weird ideas. And
I haven't followed any of this, so I'd like to hear what he has to say.
Difficult. And and every time people change their story or people come out and they have something to say but their memory's inaccurate, he gets really upset because he's trying to maintain the integrity of this really important case. Mm-hmm. So he's got a new book out. He'll be talking about new aspects. He's got a lot of stuff on people, I guess I could say. You know, he's looked at all of these witnesses and everything very closely. But he isn't the type of person to air a lot of dirty laundry. So I don't think people can expect that if they are expecting that. But, you know, he'll at least be, again, setting the record straight on here's what happened. But, yeah, a lot of great stuff. We've got James Fox coming back. I don't know if you saw that. And he's going to be helping us with this Phoenix Lights because we're celebrating the 25th or 20th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights. And so he'll be bringing some witnesses that were in his documentaries. He's going to be showing some video of Fife Symington talking about, the Arizona governor talking about seeing the Phoenix Lights that he hasn't shared before. So that's going to be really fun. And we'll have a panel talking all about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a whole bunch of cool stuff. So we've got we've got Ryan Sprague. I don't know if you've talked with him much. It'll be his first talk.
Yeah, I've talked with him a little bit, and he actually interviewed me for a piece he was writing. So I've had some interaction with him, but I'm looking forward to be able to talking to him a little bit more. David Marler is going to be there. I think he's spoken before, and I like David a lot. He's one of the nicest people I've ever met, and he has the biggest UFO library I've ever seen.
And he's one of the most careful and thorough researchers. He's amazing how, you know, meticulous he is in going through this stuff. And so what's funny is he was supposed to do a talk about the New Mexico sighting. I forget which one right now, because we had a picture that he used and he figured out the background of that picture and all of this stuff. And then he did that talk somewhere else. So I told him, you need to do something original. And he said, okay, how about this? He's been working on the Battle of LA because he has a photograph. And he was able to do some research about that photograph, figure out who actually took this famous picture of the Battle of LA, because people are like, you know, what is this? Could they have gotten it wrong? Right. But he's gotten some really cool stuff related to the Battle of LA. And, you know, that's an incredible sighting. And with all of this, we always try to – I don't think of – when I do anything, I don't do anything for ufologists or a UFO people. I do it for the mainstream. Mm-hmm. And so
I thought you were about to say I do it for me, which would be exactly the way why I do my show.
That's hilarious. Well, somewhat of that I'd have to admit.
Well, of course. Otherwise you wouldn't want to do it.
Yeah, exactly. The mainstream with the what I want, but with the mainstream in mind. You know, Battle of LA is a great case, so it's a good one to go over. That photo is just so spectacular that it's a lot of fun. So that's going to be really good. Erling Strand, I don't know if you've ever heard him, this professor from Norway.
No, I haven't. That I would like to see that talk about the Hestalen. Yeah. Hestalen. Yeah.
You're going to be floored because with the Hestalen lights, you know, mostly there's a lot of scientists looking into this, people from various universities, they've gotten video of these anomalous lights in this valley. A lot of what you hear is some speculation from these guys about how it could be plasma formed by, you know, maybe some volcanic or other sort of activity in the area.
Yeah.
But you're going to be surprised by what he has to say about this. And, you know, he takes students out there. It's an actual class to investigate these things. So what he has to say is actually very surprising. And essentially, it's just more of a mystery than any of these people let on. It's just really weird. I guess other people who haven't spoken before who are kind of notable is definitely a neuroscientist who has looked into the abduction phenomena and interviewed. What he says is he's gotten inventories, which in psychology means like a survey that you put out there of people who believe they've had extraterrestrial experiences, and he's putting this information together. Kathleen Martin has done that already. She wrote a book about it, but he has a lot more people than she had. He's been able to reach a lot more people, so that'll be interesting, especially
Bob because Davis,
he comes from that background. Yeah. Yeah, so that'll be really cool. I don't know, a lot of stuff. Paul Stonehill on Russian cases. He's the authority there. Noe Torres talking about cowboys and aliens. A lot of fun. These are cases from news clippings from like the 1800s and the old West. These are UFO stories from the cowboy days. So really cool stuff. He's a great researcher. It's a lot of fun. Ted Rowe from NARCAP. So, which is really neat because the NARCAP guys are kind of in a world on their own. They don't usually interact with the UFO people that much because they're very careful about their credibility. And these guys, you know, Dr. Richard Haynes is another guy, probably a more well-known person that
retired from NARCAP. He said that he was retiring from it. Yeah. He just announced that probably about a week or two ago.
But they work strictly with the aviation field and, investigating UAP. They're the ones who came up with that. He's going to talk about his conversation with John Podesta and how Podesta adopted from that conversation the term UAP from them. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty interesting.
Great.
And, Erica Lukes has some great cases from Utah. Of course, we'll have Ben Hansen and Yvonne Smith back. We already talked about Ben. Right. We'll have Stan Friedman. Who's just always a pleasure. He's another guy who's just witty and you know, on it all of the time. And then probably one of our most controversial or another fringe one is this guy, Ken Johnston, who says he, you know, has these exclusive photos from NASA that he feels show alien bases on the moon. This typically isn't my forte in that I don't think most of these pictures we have coming out from Mars and Moon that allegedly have, you know, show this or that. I have never been able to see anything in any.
Yeah, me either. However, I would like to see some of that. I've seen some very strange things, but nothing really spectacular. Maybe he has that.
Yeah, he might. I mean, but the thing is his credibility, he's got the most credibility out of anybody saying this sort of thing in that he really did train astronauts and he is a retired aerospace engineer. So so he has the credentials. He's worked in those areas. And so we'll have to see what he has to say. I know George Knapp has interviewed him and I asked George first, you know, what do you think of this guy? Is he just making it all up or something? And George said he seems very credible. He's a nice guy. At least he believes what he's saying. And I eventually then got to meet him and he is a great guy. He's a nice guy. He's willing to talk to anybody and he does seem very genuine. Yet he believes what he's saying. And that's really for me what's important and is that they are coming from a place where they're trying their best to find out the truth and they're being honest about things regardless of what their perspective is or if it differs with my own, that they're doing honest work. And I think he is.
Many years ago in my magazine, I actually had a friend of mine met a NASA scientist at a party in the 90s sometime, and he showed him pictures of things of craters that near the North Pole of the moon that were square. And I published that, and I think it's in my newest book too, just a little piece about it called Square Craters on the Moon. And you look at the pictures, and they look basically like there's a bunch of craters around them, and there's these square things.
Yeah.
And he tried to get better pictures of them. I think after he initially discovered them, he went back to NASA and they said, we don't have those pictures anymore. This is typical, right? So yeah. I'd like to hear what Johnston says about what he's discovered and see some of his images.
Yeah, I think you're probably like me about these and it's similar to with everything else. I'm not close to the idea at all. I would love to see something like that, but
I haven't totally yet, open, and, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't care if it's true or not. I just want to see what somebody's found out and enter that into my personal database and either say, oh, looks like there's stuff on the moon. I can't go there, but I can be reasonably certain. Or, you know, nah, that just looks like natural stuff to me and I don't agree with them. But whatever, I still want to see it.
Yeah, and here's one too. I forgot to mention is Jennifer Stein is going to be talking about crop circles. Which is a bit surprising because she's not really known for that. She did the Travis Walton documentary. She's done other documentaries, but I have heard over and over that her crop circle talk is amazing and that it's the best. The first time I approached her, I said, I heard your crop circle talk. It's great. Do you want to do that at the conference? I think last year. And she said, no, I'm not a crop circle researcher. I just put some stuff together because a friend wanted me to. And I got so much good response. I just talked to a guy who said he didn't really think much of crop circles until he saw her talk. And now he's more mystified. And so, but I had heard that from others. So I said, you've got to do it. And so she said, oh, okay. So she's doing her crop circle talk.
Okay.
So,
I'd love to see that because guess what I talked about last night at the meeting I went to was a crop circle talk. And I was asked to give a crop circle talk by another conference. And I said, well, I'm not really a crop circle researcher. And they said, this is what people want to hear. So put up a crop circle talk. It's like, okay, I've never actually been in one, but I talked to Nancy Talbot from BLT Research because I known her from a long time ago. I talked to Nick Redfern, and then I talked to John Lundberg, who is one of the people that makes them. And he told me all the weird stuff that happens to the people while they're making them.
Mm-hmm.
Paranormal things happening to them. And nobody really knows too much about that. And he was absolutely honest about it. And I don't think he's, I don't think he's pulling my leg on this. I think really, because the weird thing is I talked to a couple other people and they told me the same thing that don't even know him, or at least that well. So yeah, there's a big conspiracy of crop circle makers to fool everybody, or they're calling up some weird kind of force that messes with them and other people.
Yeah. It's a weird thing that you do hear from a lot of these crop circle makers, the weird stuff they experience, like the balls of light or crap like that.
There's flashes in their face a lot too. Like somebody set off a flash bulb right in front of your face and you're the only one that can see it. Somebody can be standing 5 feet away from you and they don't see it.
Wow.
So it's internal,
I forgot to mention Richard Dolan, he had contacted me, about a year ago and said, I want to come back to the Congress. And we had talked. He's not really talking about Congress type stuff, which we stick to UFOs for the most part. Mm-hmm. And he said, but I want to do this talk and I want to put a new talk together for the Congress. So he is. He's going to be talking about the media and media bias in UFO coverage. So everybody loves hearing from Richard Dolan. So that ought to be interesting. And then Kathleen Martin, interesting enough, even though she's known for abduction research, her talk is very much like Alexander's, or somewhat like it. It's too much like it. She called me and said, hey, Alexander's doing a similar talk than I am. And I said, trust me, you guys are coming from different perspectives. She's talking about weird paranormal stuff that happens around UFO sightings or abduction type stuff that people report. But
good. I think that should be really paid attention to. It's something that people have kind of ignored it for a long time. It's like, oh, it's going to make us look bad. You already look bad. Just dive into the weird stuff because a lot of that stuff is going to be fruitful, I think.
Yeah. So she's taking a high level view of this. She's interviewed hundreds, if not thousands of people. So it's a high level view. Whereas John Alexander is talking about his personal experiences.
Right.
So what's interesting is to see how those jive, and how those fit together. So that's what I told her. And she said, OK, because, Stanton, who's her partner, is debated with Alexander quite a bit, and we'll probably have a little bit of that at the conference when our government panel. But so she kind of typically sees herself as on the other side of the fence to Alexander, I think.
Yeah,
so
I'd really like to see that.
Hey,
yeah, exactly.
What is this? Me and Alexander agreeing about something.
I think that'd be great. I would really like to see the government panel thing. I'd actually like to sneak on it because I've got some interest in it, and
I know, and you should be on it. And this was really hard. This is what was hard. We've got space for four people, and that's it.
Yeah.
So it was really difficult to figure out who to put on it.
Well, people that have been in it, like Alexander and probably Charles Holt's in there. And
exactly. You got to have Alexander and Holt.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to take advantage of having Ted Rowe, who probably has, more FAA insight and than anybody,
right?
Because of what they do. Mm-hmm. And so that fourth person was really, really difficult. But I also wanted to balance things.
Yeah.
So that's why I chose Stanton Friedman.
I see.
However.
Yeah, you know, I'm only like, joking there. It's your Congress. You do what you want with it.
No, but Ben is going to be talking about the president and UFOs. Mm-hmm. We've got you who have done a lot of research with, you know, around DOTY and many other things. So you've worked with files. We've got Stonehill with Russia.
Right.
We have Perler, who's also looked at tons and tons of mm-hmm. files. So you all would be excellent on that panel, but I just can't fit you. So I was going to ask all of you to be there, and I want to give you first dibs at the mic. So if you come up with something, please come up to the microphone.
Sure, sure, I will.
I was thinking of asking you guys to come sit over by the microphone because I really would love all of your input because, the insight that you all have is invaluable. So I'm glad you brought that up. I apologize right now that I couldn't fit you up.
I make a request. I have no ego in it. It's like, it'd be fun. But if not, I'll be there and listen.
For me, I just really hope that you all are there and participate because
I'll show up.
Yeah, that makes it a much more interesting conversation. Mm-hmm. And I know, that people will be at odds. What's funny is we did a panel with me and Alexander and Charles Holt, and first time I saw them together was at the Roswell or the Las Vegas. They did a talk at the Atomic Testing Museum.
Oh, yeah, that one. I remember, yeah.
And they fought. we're like, you're wrong and you're wrong. And it was heated and it was fun. So I tried to reproduce that at Roswell.
Yeah.
But by this time, now they've spent a lot of time together. And, we even went out and had food and everything. And so they get along really well. So whenever I tried to bring up topics and that they had differences of opinions on, they were just so polite with each other that it wasn't very interesting. It was informational, but it wasn't exciting. So we'll see if I can if Stanton will help bring up that level, and so will Ted will help bring some energy things. So we'll see if we can get more debate going on.
Yeah. Is there going to be – and this one I really push is no UFO Jeopardy, huh?
No UFO Jeopardy. I'm really sorry about that, too.
That's my favorite part of the conference.
What's weird is we don't sell many DVDs of the UFO Jeopardy. We usually have pretty low attendance to the UFO Jeopardy, but it is so much fun. I love it. It's a ton of work to put together.
Yeah, I bet.
But we all love it, all of us who put it together. My boss loves it. Everybody who goes loves it because I hear from people all the time.
You have a private one in somebody's room or in the bar or something.
Yeah. So, the Jeopardy's fun. We'll definitely have that back next year. This year, we just wanted to fit in the Phoenix a panel
on I understand.
The Phoenix Lights. So that's what took it up. But how about this? When we have a UFO Jeopardy next year, if you show up, we'll let you be a contestant.
Okay. Now I'm going to look really bad if I lose.
Yeah. Well, and you would be surprised. There's some tough people. Nick Pope, he really loved being on it, and he was really
tough. Won.
I don't think we had O'Brien, and he's dying to be on it.
Yeah.
So we'll put him on there with you. You'll have to go up against O'Brien. He thinks he can beat anybody. So
yeah I think Nick I could Pope. Beat most people. I don't know about Nick Pope or Chris O'Brien. That'd be a race because some of the government stuff nobody knew, and Nick knew it. And then Chris, I think Chris Rukowski came in second, very close second.
Yeah, Chris was great. And then some people you think would do good. The first year we had it, Ruben Uriarte, who's been in this forever. I think it was just he couldn't get a handle on the rules, but man, did he bomb. But he was hilarious. He was really funny. It was really fun. But,
that's the other part of it. It's just not answering the questions. It's all the, the banter in between and, what kind of a dumb question is that? And that's not the answer. And you're wrong. It was fun.
Yeah, it's really fun. And the audience is so freaking smart. That's what's funny is I don't think there was once. I think there was once, now that I can think of it. There was once where everybody was stumped and I was able to have the answer. And I'm very proud of that. I can't even remember what it was. But the audience, there's plenty of times where I and the contestants are stumped and the audience knows what it is, or at least somebody is.
Right.
Many, many times that's happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that when I was there, and I was sitting there going, oh my God, I think I could have might have won this, actually, because I didn't come in at the beginning. I got there. I landed at the airport, got in the car, and I actually got there about, you know, maybe 20 minutes into it.
Uh-huh.
So
well,
that's,
sorry about that.
Yeah, it's okay. It's these are just wishes, and not all wishes are fulfilled. Not right away, anyway. February 15th through 19th at the in not in Phoenix, but at the is it pronounced the Wekopa Resort?
Yeah, Wekopa Resort. So it's actually on a reservation. Well, you've been there. It's gorgeous.
It's a very nice place,
and it's just 20 minutes away from the. Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix. It's just outside of Phoenix. Although when you're there, you wouldn't know.
No, it's out in the middle of the desert.
Yeah, and you feel like you're in the middle of the desert, although you're really close to Phoenix. So, so it's a lot of fun. UFOCongress.com for more information. And you only have a week to be able to buy tickets online at a discounted price, and they're much cheaper. Surprisingly, a lot of people don't buy tickets till they show up, but you'll save quite a bit of money if you go online to UFOCongress.com and pick up your tickets now. Our speaker's only pass, if you don't want to go to everything, is only $200, which is pretty much as much of if not less than most of the other conferences, even though they're a weekend long and we're 5 days.
Right. And it's always been a nice long a conference where you can get to talk to people. It's like, oh, exactly. I'm going to talk to him or her later. And instead of having to do it tomorrow, you've got 3 or 4 or 5 days to do this to try and track somebody down.
We always leave plenty of time in the evenings for people to do that because that's what people like to do. When do you get a chance to spend so much time with like-minded people and some of your favorite authors and everything? And because everybody's so accessible and there's time included, that if you have someone in particular you want to sit and talk with, Stanton Friedman or Ben Hansen, you're going to have that chance.
Okay. I want to thank you, Alejandro, for being very patient with me and my questions on the Chilean UFO thing. You're the only person I could think of besides maybe the guy from Metabunk to talk to about this because, one, you're kind of more of an advocate for the UFO side of things, and two, you seem to be one of the more even-handed people. So I appreciate that, and I thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what's really fun. I think we have a similar perspective, and I don't have a vested opinion either way. And so thank you very much. I'm glad you wanted to talk about it because I like talking about it as well.
Like I said, thanks again. And I'll see you in, 2 weeks? Something like that? 3 weeks?
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah.
So really quick here. Yeah, awesome. It'll probably feel like just a few days from now, but it'll be a lot of fun.
All right.
All right.
Thanks again, Alejandro, and I'll see you soon.
My pleasure. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Take us to your president. Leave their tidings from the moon. At the rate our people breed, we've too many mouths to feed. We may be among you soon. Take us to your president. We've a growing rate of birth. We just sit around and moon, cause there's no more room to spoon by the light of yonder earth. So send us surplus of potatoes.
Lots of meat and tomatoes.
Just help us however you please. If we can't persuade you,
we'll have to invade you.
How long can we live on green cheese? Now you know why we are here. And the reason we've been sent.
why we are here. And the reason we've been sent.